I'm here at the Hockey Museum at stand at the Euros 2015 with Roger Self. And Roger, if you'd introduce yourself and give us your date and place of birth, if you would, just for the record.
And date of birth.
If you wouldn't mind.
10/6/39.
Thank you very much. What I'd like to do is take you through some of your hockey past and some of the major events that you've been a part of in the hockey, development of hockey in England, Great Britain and Wales, as it happens. So could you start by telling me how and when you got interested in sport, in hockey in the first place?
When I was at school at Elizabeth College in Guernsey, and in those days we played on the cricket outfield, but that's where I learned to play hockey.
So you actually started at an age?
I would have started playing hockey. I passed the scholarship at age 11, and we learned hockey 3 years after that.
Just play at school?
I just played at school, and then I played a bit at St Luke's because I was in their football team, but my knees gave up and I found I could play hockey, which was on the cricket pitch, across the cricket pitch in St Luke's main building. And played some awful grounds at Torquay and these sorts of places, and Exeter, which was hard concrete, red grass, not even that, some of them. But I played it then when I started teaching, and after I'd taught for 3 years, I started my own business, and the hockey was all part of weekends and where we went there after that. So I carried on playing hockey with the local club.
Which club was that?
Redditch.
Redditch. And did you go on and play county hockey?
Worcestershire.
And territorial above?
No. I was asked to join the Phantoms Hockey Club, which was an occasional side for going to Western and Folkestone, this sort of thing, and the chap who run the Phantoms asked me if I would, because he knew my background, asked me if I would become the coach to Wales. There was a chap called Tony Bannister who's now died, but he was the first manager of Wales, and then I went on to coach Wales at international level. Our first success to ever beat them, and then we succeeded in beating them two or three times.
That was England, you
mean? England, yes. Yeah, and we won the Triple Crown, which was England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. We won the Triple Crown as well. And I was considered for Olympic coach, but England had tied it all up to have their own people. But I managed to get into the general run of top hockey by Southgate asking me to go and help them. And they were full of internationals, Mike Corby, Bernie Cottons and all these people, the McGinns and so on.
This would have been in the 70s.
And we won the European Club Championship 3 times on the trot. Spain, London, and there's somewhere else, I can't remember. I was then being lobbied by the Welsh to go forward for becoming the Olympic Games as a coach. manager, whatever you like. But I brought in people, you see. I brought in a structure. I brought David Whittaker in as a coach. And he did very well. I hadn't brought Whittaker in at that stage.
No, it was later, I think.
It was a bit later. Because we were putting together a good GB side, which I was asked to do. And then we had that wretched business of Margaret Thatcher saying we shouldn't go.
This was the 1980 Olympics in Moscow.
Yes, to Moscow. We qualified. We'd been to various places to qualify, and we qualified. And unfortunately, the members from England, Scotland, Wales convened a meeting. We were playing at Lord's. I had a good side then, and the president of England and Scotland decided to vote against it. So my vote didn't count, although I was on the board. And our players were heartbroken with that. Notwithstanding, I think Seb Coe went and Princess Anne. And we didn't go, but we had a very good team. And then 4 years later, we had Los Angeles, and the people who boycotted the Russians. The Russians then boycotted Los Angeles. And all of a sudden, we heard on the radio that we were going, and I had to form the team, and it was these old players.
Had you not qualified for Los Angeles?
No, we hadn't qualified. We'd been playing, but we were invited. And we went. And I could tell you a lot of stories of money and how it was granted and who we met and who got in the way, but I won't go into that. We went, and we should have won a gold medal. But there you are, we didn't. We beat all the top teams. That was the problem, was we didn't do justice. I think it was against Germany. And we got a bronze out of nothing.
Fantastic. What was it like actually going to the Olympics, having had your hopes dashed in 1980?
Well, there was a lot of people who were absolutely jacked off with it all, and we said, well, we might as well go. I was talking to the president of Europe a little bit earlier, who I met in years ago, but we had a quick three internationals, two against Holland and one against Belgium, and we had those practice matches, and the boys got going, and we all got going. But I think the Southgate business was important too, because the Southgate boys had, they were the England players, a lot of them, but they hadn't somehow got the spark. They weren't sparked into, let's get and do it, but they got it. And we had some different sort of training as well. And certainly my Olympic sides will remember running up and down the hills at Lillishaw and running up and down the drive before breakfast. And it was a real physical, and of course our physical preparation when we went to Los Angeles, because people like Sean Curley Batchelor were natural athletes anyway, and they built up this speed and determination.
Was that something you introduced to the training regime?
Yes,
and
yes.
What made you do that?
Because we knew we'd have to run around a lot to get the ball. But I think what our boys people like John Potter, who were sort of 18 years of age, they were growing up. Well, we're here. This is the big stuff. We're not here just to make the numbers up. I can remember the games. They went for it.
What's your strongest memory of those Olympics in Los Angeles?
Not my fondest memory. I know we should have beaten Germany. We were good enough. We lost the right back with a bad back called Bob Cattrall. And Bob Cattrall, I took him on tour to Australia and he didn't come back. But he was a major reason why Southgate got better.
A key player.
Oh, he was a key player. And then we had a good player, Sam Martin. Sam Martin played for Ireland, but in those days people living in Northern Ireland could come and play with us and all that rotten politics. We missed a few players as a result of that, but looks as though the Irish are going to get in. The results are very good at the moment. They'll get in and they'll have got in for the first time.
So what was the reaction back in England when you came back with the bronze medal, which presumably nobody had expected?
We were all on cloud cuckoo land at the time, but I don't remember it quite as clearly as I remember Seoul.
Tell me about Seoul.
Well, Seoul, these boys were open for business, and whenever we played, wherever we played as Great Britain, which wasn't that much, but they knew what was necessary. And of course Australia was going to be potentially so difficult for us because of their physical abilities. And of course we've got Ian Taylor, the best goalkeeper in the world, and the best goalkeeper in the world has ever known, with all his kit and the business. And we had to play hard. We played against the Germans. We had to also understand the umpiring of some of the less well-known hockey countries, which was quite difficult. But they were so determined, they then delivered the goods.
Absolutely.
And the Princess Anne came down to shake their hands and said, "Now, Roger, you can retire. You've got a gold medal.
Yeah,
you can now retire."
Probably meant you've done it all, rather it's time you went.
Well, that's all I remember about it. It's quite an occasion. Oh, lots of things happened. And
tell me some of the stories of things that happened over there.
Well, people like Paul Barber were very important. And I can remember the boys had gone out in the warm-up area to get warmed up, and running up and down and that sort of stuff. Barber comes up to me and he says, "Coach, do us a favour." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, you normally come in and you give the boys a bit of fire, but I want to do it." Barber, he wasn't the captain. He said, "I want to do it." He said, "You stay out and I won't let you down." So walked up and down the practice area a bit and had a look, and the commentators were asking me for comments and things like that. I said, "I'm sorry, I can't do any. I was thinking too much about Barber's request." So I called him over and I said, "Go on, you carry on." Because they were all obviously nervous as hell, and I would probably have paid them quite a lot without the necessity. And Paul said, "I'll do it, leave it to me." I also got the feedback he knocked seven bells out of them. But there was nobody backsliding.
No.
Not in Paul's render. But that's about living with it, with the happening. Living while it goes.
And he was a natural leader.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. A man. A man, a real man. Come on.
Who was the captain?
Richard Dodd's captain. Which is, again, was a good thing. I remember he had to delay going into a job in order to facilitate this. And that was at the time when there wasn't any money in the bag to pay them. You could pay some of their expenses, but not really very much. It's all. But Richard was very good because he could hold it together and he could talk to me too. He would talk to me.
So he and Paul Barber made a good team.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Richard had got it all sewn up. And it was terrific. But that was a team coming together after all the pushing about. There was always a distaste because England didn't want to support Great Britain, but Great Britain was the place where the money would ultimately come out of Sport England, and that was terribly important to understand that and get the people who were responsible for supporting team sports have to know, on a business-like basis, on what basis do you want this money and how are you going to use it? Fine. And these sorts of things were introduced and been picked up massively since I have been involved.
But it must have been an era of transition during that time, from the purely amateur,
yes,
pay your own way, through to a much more professional approach.
Absolutely. Tell you what I did do for Seoul. I bought in the England squash player who was Peter. I can't remember his name now. But he used to play against the wonderful squash player that used to play for hours and hours and hours. And he played squash with a caliper. And he was a doctor for industry in Birmingham. And I got him to come and I said, Peter, would you come and do some doctor's work for us? He said, yeah, I'll come down. And I took him to Seoul. And the other one, Kevin, his sister Judy, the funny one, film star.
Judy Walters.
He brought another dimension to our general preparations. And
in what way?
Well, we never had a professional physiotherapist. We never had a professional doctor. We had Stephen Thomas, which is an old player of mine, who came and said, yes, I'll come, and he came voluntarily, and he was the last of the medic. And I can tell you lots of stories about Stephen, not least because he helped Seb Coe. Seb Coe was very friendly with our boys in Los Angeles, and I could tell you stories about that as well, because he would train on the field by the halls of residence where we were. He'd train on the field, sprints, and our boys would be going to the bus to get on. And I can remember once they had their bags, and Curly and Batchelor get on the bus, get off the bus when we get to the pitch, and they get their bags, put them on the start line, because there was a racetrack round. But they both got down, and they did three laps, three lap race, and they ran like bloody hell. Because they're athletes, those two boys, are fast as hell. And I said, what was all that about? He said, well, if Seth Coe can do it, so have we. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. But I always remember, I can remember so many things, that the players have to be able to bite the bullet themselves. You know, you can shout till you're blue in the face, but you've got to have the, you've got to have some amusement. And make sure that you were on their side. I will tell you that.
When did you retire from the coaching?
Well, it was because well before Philip Kimberley and all this lot. I had a request from England somehow, would I get involved? And I preferred to stay in Great Britain, because I always felt that England was a tinderbox with their various appointees and managers and so on. Their heart would not be on it, because I, or someone like me, were running it. And I could have got involved, but I didn't. I kept out of it.
Any regrets?
None at all. None at all. Why should I? What I did by staying in the staying as chairman of the board, because you get Scotland with two people and Wales with two people and England with two people, giving out what the Great Britain board are going. Bear in mind the money was coming out of UK sport, and I had meetings with Liz Nicol, and she's still there, in order to try and get a balance that what GB were going to do and what they weren't going to do. Well, what was fundamental, and Kimberley was all part of this at the time, in a way was most obstructive, because he was trying to fly his own flag a bit for the England hockey, which wasn't the right way forward. And I became chairman of the board then. I gave up after Seoul, and I said to the representative Scotland, England, Wales, I said, look, I think we've got the rules written in a very poor piece of paper of how we should operate, and I think we should operate as a company. Oh. And I formed a company, and I got one of the old GB players, Rob, who was Taylor Wessing, I think the solicitors in London, to put together a raison d'etre in a new arrangement between the countries to act like a board, with a couple of people as non-executive directors. So I formed that company with Taylor Wessing, and it was sent out to Scotland, and then we had a meeting, and they said, well, how's it going to operate? I said, well, look, you'll have me as a chairman, and you'll have a couple of non-execs, and I suggest that one of the non-execs is a man called Bryn Williams. And Bryn was a man who ran companies down in Cardiff. He was an old Welsh player, and he took over being one of them. And the other one was David Collier. David Collier was at one stage the big chief of where they played the fourth test match. Who's that? Leicestershire. And he went down to Lords and was the head honcho at Lords. He also was on FIH as an umpire and an umpiring committee man. He was most valuable, because you can imagine from what it was before, with women round the table and men round the table thinking they know everything, and they'd bring somebody from Australia with them who was coaching, a load of bollocks. Anyway, we soon ran it and got it going, and it's called the Framework Agreement, which is actually on the GB website.
That's still how GB is run, isn't it?
I think that's how GB is run. And that was all I bothered with after hockey. I finished.
Well, you made a major contribution to the sport.
Well, it needed it, and it needed to be able to have sensible discussions. I can remember Liz Nichols' requests was, could they use our framework agreement with other sports? Well, that's interesting. Because I played seven bells with some of the people they were appointing to come in and see how we were doing it, because they did that sort of thing. And I met these guys, and I brought one of them, who was hired by them, I brought him, and I said, you better come to the next board meeting. And once I put him in front of Scotland, England, Wales, it was another thing altogether, because he was their spy in the camp. And they also put another one in there. Who's the England goalkeeper?
Oh, Simon Mason.
Yeah.
Simon, yes.
Well, he came to one of these meetings as well when we started up with the new processes, and he sat at the end of the table and started to say some things. I said, oh, okay, we'll take that a bit later on. And I said to him, have a look at that. It's the match statistics of your last goalkeeping business abroad. I said, if you're going to let that amount of goals in, we are definitely going to lose three or four matches per six matches you play. Now, unless people get the message, and you're not giving it to them, we're going nowhere. I remember that. Because it was the truth.
What happened as a result?
Well, it was the same. It was the same process that happened when they had an Australian chap, and I was asked, this Richard Dodds was involved in this as well with me, he was playing for England, and the committee, England committee, were a load of old ducks. I had to give a presentation, so I gave a presentation, and I'd interviewed people. And coming out of it, when I spoke to the players, this Australian guy was miles off the plot for the way they were learning prior to that. So I had two or three long chats with him, and the blokes as well, the players, and found out the background. And he said, I don't think that I'm doing what you want me to do. And I said, well, it doesn't look that way. Very nice man. I remember him as a player in Australia. He said, I think I ought to give up this. So he gave up. Because the players weren't producing any results. And nothing fired it. But England hockey is different now, I think.
When you look back, what do you gain most pleasure from remembering during your time in hockey?
Well, I think the admin part, the structure part, was the thing that caused me more bother. But they were nowhere near the reality of what was needed. So I can't really say much about what's going on now.
But what do you get most pleasure from remembering? Would it be so?
Well, the relationships. Mm-hmm. I think the players are still in our close to what was. There'd be something wrong with them if they weren't, wouldn't it? So I enjoy seeing these boys, and we have a lunch and an evening celebration after every Olympics, and I've been able to go down, although a bit limited, and my son drove me down, and also my doctor, Stephen Thomas, his son brought him down, and even one or two of them now come and sit next to me and say, why didn't you take me to Seoul?
But the answer is?
I don't say anything about it. I said I couldn't count.
Were there some then who expected to go to Seoul that you didn't pick?
Well, it's one of them, unfortunately, had a bad, broke a hand.
Well, that can't expect.
And I kept him going all the time to try to get him to go. But because he was so wonderful, the way he played in Los Angeles, he never put a foot wrong. But we had to take a fit person because he was smashed up. And luckily we got a very, very good left half as well, which was the England left half. And he was Martin Grimley. But they all come. They all want to still come. We've run it every time we haven't been to the Olympics since we won it. I suppose the next one will be next year. After the business out in
Rio,
yeah.
You looking forward to that?
Well, I will be watching the games. And I hope that they don't have any trouble out there. Because running Olympic Games, which I got to know a bit about when I was on FIH, and it's all thin, really. The margins seem very thin between the teams going and that particular country.
Yeah.
Whereas when you went to Australia, wow, what a difference for an Olympic Games and the whole security. And I was with the FIH when I went to that one. But that was terrific. Seoul was mechanical, very mechanical. And Los Angeles was also very strong on security. We had people coming on our bus every time and standing there with their guns. It's not rather like that bloke in the railway that got shut up a couple of days back. You remember that?
I missed that.
Well, there was a chap on the train, and he was some sort of terrorist, was clicking his rifle through, and two American Marines came alongside, heard it, that smashed it down, and this bloke was all ready to go. Did you see it in the paper?
No.
Stay sharp. Stay sharp. Christ, who Roger. Put you in?
Roger, it's been a great joy talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your memories with me.
I hope it will do some good.
I'm sure it will.